Okay, so it's Thursday, but we've Chris Ashmore with us because we had to move stuff around and I'm all conflustered. Hi, Chris. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for calling up. Yesterday, there was just so many people in studio and I forgot it was Wednesday and it's all my fault, but we appreciate you coming on. The podcast now is live. It went up live yesterday, so normally we're talking about it going live. It's there. It's available for you. We'll talk about that in a mo. But just want to talk about some business news and air passenger numbers at Derry Airport. What's the story?
Yes, now, a lot of people from Donegal use City of Derry Airport. Sometimes, I think it's around 40% of the passengers going through the airport. Figures out for the last quarter of last year, and the number of passengers going through City of Derry Airport was up 62%. Now, that's a very big increase. The reason is they have new routes, EasyJet flying to Edinburgh and Liverpool. So that has pushed up the figures considerably. Looking at the north, overall, Belfast International, Belfast City, both up, and they are above pre-COVID levels. Now, City of Derry is still slightly below the pre-COVID levels, but with these new routes this year, we're going to see the figures well above that. And you know, maybe just to put it into perspective, Greg, City of Derry Airport, the last 3 months of the year, about 52,000 passengers. By contrast, Belfast City, 580,000, and Belfast International, 1.5 million. So it's 30 times busier, putting it in stark terms. But the trend is upward for City of Derry. And as you know, you've flown out of it. It's handy. And
Then we had Ryanair and their announcement on Birmingham flights. It's constantly trying to keep it busy, justify its existence. There's a lot of taxpayers' money that goes into it. It's a tough old job. It's doing well. They're improving, but I would say it's constant to try and keep it relevant. No, that sounds terrible, but I think people will understand what I'm trying to say there. Right, okay, renewable generation for February, you've got the stats.
Yes, the renewable generation on the island of Ireland was 53% of all our electricity came from green sources, so 48.3% was wind, hydro just 2.1%, and then a little bit of biomass and solar, but over 50%. Coming from renewables, and that figure is gradually trending up.
We need to get to 80% by 2030, and it needs to be consistent. Needs to be consistent. How much of that is used, do we know? Because that's what's generated. I suppose they could look at the figure that's generated, then they could look at our daily usage, and then come up with a figure of 53%. Or are we drawing 53% of our power from renewable generation, I wonder, because sometimes this information can be hard to get your hands on. We do know we don't have storage and our infrastructure, a lot of this electricity goes to waste. I wonder what the crack is there.
And this is why you've featured on the programme and it's coming up now. We're talking about how do we store this electricity and battery storage. Interesting, there's a place down in Wicklow called Turlock Hill, which was built back, probably late 70s or 80s. And it's a pump storage facility. It's a great example of how you can make use of electricity when there's over supply in the network. They pump water up to an artificial lake. And then when there's need for increasing the network, the water comes back down, flows down, generates.
Stone Age batteries.
and it works. But the thing is, it's a very expensive thing to build in the first place. Doesn't generate a huge amount of electricity. But we may see a few more of those in the future.
Who's to say? Donegal.ie is a website. And there's some opportunities on it, Chris.
Yeah, no, it's a website a lot of people from outside of Donegal click onto it. It's promoting all things Donegal. And if you're interested in a job, well, they put up posts amongst those, for example, at the moment, software developers for CETA in Letterkenny, Sheephaven Credit Union looking for a CEO, various positions at ATU in Donegal. There's all sorts of jobs there. So that's often attracting people from outside of the county.
All right, okay. Just an update on the water burst at Clonmany. I said I'd bring it to you as soon as I got it. It's Clonmany and surrounding areas, Uris, etc. Uisge Éireann and their teams are on site. Work is going to conclude, they believe, at 3 p.m. on the 6th of March, that is today, and takes a couple of hours after that for water to run clear, just to give you an update. Right, okay, Spriega Sport.
Yes, based in Cardona. Now, this is what's called a social enterprise. The aim is to create profits that go back into the community. They have got a shop, and they recycle, repurpose things. There's also a community garden, and they have, well, there's Siri clothing and Siri home stores, and they've done all sorts of great things down there. They've got recognised with an award at the All-Ireland Community and Council Awards held recently. They got the Best Business in the Community Award. So well done indeed to all there. We have featured them on the Business Matters programme in the past, and we'll do so again in the future.
Yeah, and if you ever worked in the United Kingdom, Britain and Northern Ireland, you can top up UK pension. We talked about this on this slot before, but we've also covered it on this show before as well. What's the situation and what is this deadline?
Yeah, now, if you have worked for, as you say, in the UK for more than a year and you paid your stamps and everything, there's a chance that basically you can put in more voluntary contributions. It'll help you get a pension at the end of it. There's a deadline of the 5th of April. You'll need to get advice on this. You can go online, do it yourself. It's actually, I've been on and looked at it. It's quite well done.
User-friendly.
Probably as well to get a bit of advice on it. So there's a lot of people here who may have worked in the north or the UK. Well worth checking out, because essentially what's happening is you're getting a chance to put a little bit of money into this pot for the long term, and mm-hmm. Could get a pension down the road.
Local Enterprise Week continues.
Yeah, just to mention, of course, we're right in the middle of it. Some big events, not least tomorrow, the Made in Donegal Business Summit. That's in the Mount Errigal Hotel from noon. There's a panel discussion there. Believe is the theme of the week. Amongst the speakers, Edward McDade of the football special, Willie McArthur, formerly Fruit of the Loon, Caroline Faulkner. And on the sporting side, we've Joe Barr, Jim McGuinness, Patsy McGonigal. That's on from 12. A very good event there to round things off.
Right, so let's look at this week's podcast, which is available right now for you on our website in the Listen Back section. Chris, what's coming up?
Yeah, well, first of all, I spoke with Sean Quinn, head of sales here in Highland Radio. The last weekend, the Highland Radio Hospitality Awards were on, proved to be a great success. Considerable interest in the build-up, and then as the winners were announced. And as I spoke to Sean, you know, we were making the point that this is a great way of showing how radio and social media interacting, how many people were just involved, and the numbers were quite staggering online between the nomination process, businesses sharing whether they were shortlisted or got an award. And, you know, it was just sort of like a domino effect. And we have a clip here from Sean as he reflected on what was a truly great evening.
We introduced the public vote, and that blew everybody away. You've got about roughly 120 shortlisted businesses across the, bear in mind, with 15,500 nominations. So we broke that down. And so we went out there and we said, vote for your favourite, vote for the company that you want to see win. And we got over 72,000 votes, which was just insane.
And this is where radio really comes into its own with the backup of social media. I mean, no other organisation locally could do something like this.
You've hit the nail on the head, Chris, because between ourselves using our own air and our social media, but also the businesses, they went looking as well. And the ones that got the most votes are the ones that went and asked and said and shared and looked for, vote for us if you like what we do. And if I was to put a figure on it, I would have said if we got 20,000 votes, it would have been a success. To get over 72,000 was just absolutely phenomenal. And the smallest, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a one-man band or you're a big hotel, there was thousands, thousands and thousands and thousands coming on a daily basis. So we were delighted we did it. And we're delighted that actually added value to the whole awards and the results, because I think the general public should be involved in the process. So that's a success, and we'll 1,000,000% keep it for next year.
Yeah, in fact, it's already booked for next year, and it's in the same venue as well. And there's also, we have the Customer Services Award in October as well. So we'll tell you more about that as we get closer to it. Your second guest on the show this week, Chris?
Yes, Greg. Many people may not be familiar with the Agri-Food Regulator, only established last year, and it's all about promoting fairness and transparency in that whole agri-food sector. So Melanie Hall, who's head of Unfair Trading Practices, Compliance and Enforcement, quite a title. She explained what it's really about and how it impacts on businesses in Donegal.
The Agri-Food Regulator is an independent state body. We were set up just over a year ago. Our functions are to promote fairness and transparency in the agri-food supply chain. What that means is, and the overall goal is that we have a food supply chain that is sustainable and allows everybody along that supply chain to make a living. The list of the products that the Agri-Food Regulator is concerned with is extensive. An agri-food product are live animals, so any live animal, live trees and other plants, cut flowers, ornamental foliage, as well as cereals and milling industry products. And then the food product end covers another wide range there. We have our fruit and veg, the fresh meat, dairy produce, bread and cakes, alcoholic drinks as well as non-alcoholic drinks. And then we also have processed products, your chocolate or your sauces or your dairy spreads and yogurt and all of that as well.
Okay, much more from Sean and, of course, from Melanie on the podcast, which is also broadcast on Sunday, Chris.
That's right, after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. And if you want to contact the program, best way is to email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Thanks, Chris. See you next week.
Thank you.
All this week, in association with the Donegal Sports Partnership as part of Women in Sports Week 2025, we're looking at different roles women play in sport. And also this week, there are a number of events which are running tomorrow. As part of and under the auspices of the Donegal Sports Partnership, you have a sunrise dip at Rathmullen Pier at 7 a.m. And also on Saturday, yoga and dip at Coldaff Beach at 7:30 in the morning. There's an open water dip in Thruppany Pool, Bundoran, 7:45 on Saturday. And you can go and try fishing as well at the Mongari Trout Fishery from noon and on Sunday too. You can try your hand at horse riding, sessions at 11, 12, 1 and 2 p.m. at Drumdoit Stables. More information and to book your spot, go to Donegal Sports, Sports Partnership website or socials, and you can click through to Eventbrite there. Right, now in studio with me, I have Audrey McGee, who is a Donegal Volunteer of the Year. In fact, is the Donegal Volunteer of the Year, and she's a volunteer coordinator in Rafoe Badminton Club. Good morning to you. Thank you very much for joining us, Audrey.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well, thanks.
Very, very good. You're not new to this involvement with badminton in Rafoe, are you?
No, I've been there quite a few years.
Why is it such a spawn ground for amazing talent? Is it about the infrastructure and the commitment of the likes of yourselves to bring out the best of our local people?
Yeah, the more they practice, you know, the better for the children. And if they're in every week, they get better and better. And it's just a dedication.
Very good. And why did you get involved in this anyway?
My husband, you see, played badminton.
Okay.
And then as the children came along, they would have went with him to badminton, and I would have been like going with them and collecting them, and they've done very well.
And you would have also had a particular interest in giving opportunities to younger people, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but there was open then for their friends and the children of the community, and they all practiced together, and it was like a badminton family.
Mm.
They all got together and enjoyed.
And am I right in saying that you were one of the people that established the junior club, like put a organised footing on all of that?
I helped out with them. I would meet them all coming in to club and welcome them there. And when the new one started, I always seen that they had friends when they got there.
So, I mean, we've been talking recently this week to some people that are involved in women that are involved in sport, or some that are have been doing it for quite some time, right? But, I mean, were leadership roles in sport for women, you know, we can go back four decades with you. Was it unusual, or were women more involved then and we saw a regression and now coming back? Or how have things changed over the years? And if you could just move a little bit closer for me, I would appreciate it. How have things changed over the years?
Well, as they were in the club, then we'd like to get them to come back then to help. So we have seen, like my own two daughters are now helping in the club as coaches. And it just developed from there.
How important do you think involvement in sport, be it a racket sport, running, football, field sport, whatever it is, darts for crying out loud, how important do you think it is to individuals? And I suppose if a family can do it together, to do it that way.
Oh, sport's very important for young people growing up. They have friends and they always make friends when they go to tournaments. And then they get on well together.
Brilliant. And Miriam's here with us as well, your daughter, who wasn't supposed to speak, but that's not how it works around here, Miriam. You know, you don't come into this room and not say something. Just talk a little bit about your mum, I suppose, and her influence on you, because, you know, there's a lot of nature and then there's a lot of nurture, right? Talk to me a little bit about your mum and her influence in a sporting or volunteering way for you.
Yeah, both mum and dad have been inspirational in our life. Like, they set up the juvenile club and the club in Rafoe and grew that from a handful of kids to now there's over 120 playing there. Through their role models, like, I've taken on the junior club now, I'm the coach there alongside a large team of people working in it. And we've 120 kids playing at the moment, which is just fantastic to see. But Audrey really plays a key role in inspiring the next generation of volunteers. Anybody that comes in, she'll guide them through what to do and how to do it, so that then the next year they're ready to step up, and then she's there in the background keeping us all right.
Yeah. And Audrey, you know, sometimes I think we're born with skill in certain ways, and then, you know, we can harness that skill and bring it forward. And some would say that it's all about practice. I think you're a big... You think practice is incredibly important.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Right, but saying the likes of, you know, Chloe and Sam, right?
Yes.
How much of that was raw skill? Because I always find this fascinating. Like, how many Chloes or Sams or Mark Englishes are out there, but we don't get them, and we don't get them training, and we don't drive a certain way of thinking into them? Do you know what I mean? Or
yeah, well, my husband saw that they had the skill for playing the badminton, and he sort of developed them on from that and took them to tournaments, you know, when they were quite young, and they seemed to do well in the tournaments and started winning, and all was going great.
Because it's about the game face as well too, isn't it? It's about your attitude to winning and competing as well.
Yes, uh-huh.
They're your brother and sister, Miriam.
Yeah.
Have I overlooked your fantastic sporting achievement? I don't have it in my notes here.
No, I would have played at county and interprovincial level, played for Ulster. I love the grassroots side of it, the club level, seeing the kids playing. Sport is so important for kids, young girls, young boys, to learn life lessons, to process the big emotions, the highs and the lows. And that's where Audrey has been a great role model for us all in volunteering and leaving a legacy in the club.
It is remarkable what that club has achieved. And Miriam, what's your view on, you know, how you can become Olympic level? Is it that you are born with something or born into something? Or
there's a certain amount of talent, yes, that needs to be there. But it's a mental discipline as well of being dedicated, as Audrey keeps saying, turning up from practice, being dedicated, having the right attitude, respecting your coach, respecting your club, and turning up every week and being part of that, being willing to put in that extra effort.
Audrey, you're Donegal Person of the Year. It's a fantastic honour. Where does it rank in sort of your achievements as a volunteer and being involved with organisations and associations?
It was just unbelievable when I got the phone call. I thought they were looking for some of the family. And he says, no, it's you. You've got Donegal Person of the Volunteer of the Year. And it was lovely. And we were down in Dublin.
And what a beautiful way it's presented as well. Or presented. Anyway, it looks absolutely... I'd take the box, let alone what's inside it. It looks absolutely fantastic. And then as a parent watching on, you know, and I think our children can achieve... It can be qualifying for the medal, but you can be equally proud of someone like Miriam, for instance, and her dedication and commitment to volunteering. So there's equal levels of pride, right? But in watching... Your children compete, be it at county level or beyond, were you able to enjoy that and have pride in that? Or was it, as Alex Ferguson, well, I won't quote Alex Ferguson in front of ladies, but, you know, can you enjoy those experiences or is it too nerve-wracking?
Oh, no, I loved watching them because I knew they would always give their best. And when they achieved, it was even an extra special.
And it's multi-generational now, isn't it? in your family in terms of competition.
And grandchildren, are all coming on.
We've got great volunteers, right, but everyone seems so blooming busy nowadays, don't they, in their own lives, and quite rightly so. There's an awful lot going on. Have you noticed any change in relation to that, Audrey? And I'll ask Miriam as well, but I'll start with you, in terms of, you know, getting people to come in and give of their time?
Well, if you involve the younger ones coming on, then they eventually come and help you. Like I have my granddaughter now would help me out if I have a busy day at the club. And I know that she will.
I'm finding struggle with all these timelines because Miriam's your daughter. She looks about 12. And then you're sitting there talking about granddaughters that are playing. I can't get my head around it all. But anyway, whatever you're doing, you're doing it right. I know, because all look fantastic.
It's all family, yes. And then their friends are all there too. So that encourages them.
Mm. Of course. Miriam, from your perspective, you know, often we talk about volunteering and having the spare time. I'd imagine with you it's about making the time as well. And sometimes we kind of maybe think we're busier than we are, and there's always time you can make. Is that how it is for you in your life?
It certainly is. It's definitely a juggling act, balancing everything. And that's why we're lucky to have so many volunteers, you know, working in our At the minute we're running our tournament and there's 30 events in that. So that's over a span of 3 weeks. We've 13 volunteers working every night there. It's led by Liam McGee, our secretary, and Audrey coordinates it every night. So we're just extremely lucky to have a very good team. But it is a challenge we're coming up against as everybody's managing their work, their kids and everything. So volunteering is getting more and more difficult for people. And to get to recruit volunteers, I think. But Audrey has been a great inspiration to the club. And that's what she's saying. Like last year, Sam would have sat beside you in events. Sam McKnight's been one of our excellent volunteers. Yes. And now he's there running the events this year.
There you go, yeah.
You know, she's inspiring the next generation.
And also, do you know what's particularly lovely? That you've received this honour while you're happy and you're healthy and hearty. Isn't it? You know, that's nice, isn't it, from your perspective, Miriam, as well? You know, that, you know, you can continue your work, but recognised for what you've done up until now, which I think is fantastic and really, really well deserved.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, congratulations. It is a fantastic honour. We're going to get a picture of Audrey and her wonderful award. She's a volunteer coordinator in Revaux Badminton Club, but has been honoured as Donegal Volunteer of the Year. Anything you want to add, Audrey, or any advice you can impart on us, because you know you've been at the helm of so much success, really, you know, and had such a strong influence on it. Is there any words of advice?
Just our club's outgrown the hall. We have only one court in the hall.
Make it sound so easy. Rather than reflecting, you talk about we need to do more.
We need more courts.
Yeah. Excellent. I'm a victim of success almost, Miriam. It's fantastic,
100%.
Isn't it?
The club has really outgrown the facilities we have. We're renting 3 different multi-court halls at the moment.
Wowzers.
So
why is that? Is it because, you know, people see success and they think it's achievable and it's, you know, it's an accessible sport, isn't it? I mean, some sports, like if you want to play golf, right, you might have to go and spend 800 quid in a set of golfs and walk around a field all day. But, you know, I'm not saying you can't get high-level equipment in badminton, but it's the accessibility of it, isn't it?
It's accessibility of it and the scene. Like, we are very proud to say we're the only club in the country has 2 Olympians come out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so we call it like the Chloe, Sam, Josh effect, you know, or Rachel effect.
Well, that's
where
it.
They can't see, they can't be. So they're seeing Olympians being produced out of a club.
And this is why it's so important to talk to people like yourself, Miriam, and particularly you, Audrey, because, you know, that's on the court, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen how they can inspire people to take up the racket, but also in terms of what you can contribute behind the scenes and in front of the scenes as well, Audrey. Hopefully that's an inspiration between yourself and the likes of Miriam as well, to inspire other people to make that time. I'm far busier than I am. Yeah, I really, really do. If you spoke to me now, you'd swear I didn't have a minute in the day.
Can we get you signed up then?
Oh, it's too far to refer. I'm flat out, Miriam. I'll do my bit here. I'll plug it here. Is that all right? That's why I volunteer. No, but seriously, if the truth be told, there is probably time I could do something else. All right, maybe you're inspiring me, Audrey.
Oh, good.
All right, listen, thanks so much. Congratulations. Thank you. A wonderful honour for you, but the club definitely. As well, actually.
Oh,
and,
yes. Uh-huh.
And your family, your grandchildren and Miriam and the Sam and Chloe and all of them. We can't mention them all. It's been wonderful speaking to you. Thanks so much for calling down to us.
Thank you.
It's really
very
great
much
to have
for
you
having
on.
Me.
Miriam, I know you didn't anticipate speaking, but look at, I knew you did well within you,
as they
say. So thank you, Miriam. And clearly, anyone watching will see you looking on at your mum when she's speaking and the love in her eyes, Audrey.
Brilliant. Very proud.
She's very, very, very proud, as we all are. Thanks so much, Audrey. That's Audrey McGee. And we also had a chat with Miriam McGee, isn't it? McGee, yeah. Okay. And that was all part of us recognising Women in Sports Week 2025. Tomorrow, actually, as we head into International Women's Day, there's a strong female sense to the programme as well. And we'll also, I think, be talking to somebody else through the Donegal Sports Partnership as well. But we'll take a quick break and we'll be back very shortly. Now, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. What a lovely treat to meet Audrey. What a wonderful lady she is, and a proper lady as well. Not that there's different variants of ladies, you know exactly what I'm saying, don't you? What a beautiful, gentle soul. And lovely to get to chat to Miriam as well, and allowing her to speak so warmly of her mum there. Right, so we were talking about defibs not so long ago, and someone was interested about getting training. Now, rather than me say it, I'll get the info off someone very much in the know. Rosie Shovlin from Rathmullen, and that's Rathmullen Defib and CPR training, which is happening tonight. Hi, Rosie.
Hello, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. So, I mean, it's really good to get defib training, CPR training, but we don't want to discourage people who don't have the training from using the likes of these machines. So whilst training is great and can reassure people, the defib is designed, isn't it, to be very user-friendly with verbal instructions and that type of thing?
Absolutely. I've had a lot of people, because of what we've done here in Rathmullen, say to me, I could never do CPR, and there are some people who maybe never will be able to do it, but anybody from about age 6 up could use a defib. It is so self-explanatory, and what the training does is takes the fear away from those big, scary yellow boxes.
And also from CPR, because the stats we were reading out previously, Rosie, was the majority of the time you might be called on to do CPR, it's on a family member. I've been in this situation, and I know you were in this situation back around about Christmas time, in fact, in 2022, yeah. Rosie. Can you talk to me as much as you're comfortable in talking to me about that experience?
So just the stat that I always start with, 80% of out-of-hospital cardiac arrests will happen in the home. So if you know where your nearest defib is from your home, 80% of the time, that's where you're going to be. But on Christmas Eve 2022, my whole family were all together, about 10 adults, 6 kids. It was mayhem, your typical wrapping paper mayhem. And out of nowhere, my mum dropped to the ground. We rang 999. And they asked, does she have a pulse? Is she breathing? We said, no. And they said, start CPR right now. And of all of us in the room, only one knew how to do CPR, my twin brother, James. Hi, James. And he got down on his hands and knees and did CPR all by himself for 20 full minutes. And he had learned how to do it 3 years previous in his old job, who had hosted a training session. And so I just couldn't shout out, if you can't make it at Rye at 6 p.m. this evening, businesses that are listening, please host these sessions. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for that, my mum probably wouldn't be with us today.
And thankfully she is, Rosie. And I'm not a medical professional. I think that's quite obvious. But CPR is really quite simple, isn't it? In that it is working the heart to ensure that blood is circulating around the body. So in an instance whereby it might take an ambulance some time to come or a defib to get on site, I'm presuming it keeps the brain oxygenated or with blood flowing through. Like, it's really that simple in that time, as isn't it? It's just to keep the organ working and the blood flowing until such time as the defib is applied or the ambulance crews arrive or what have you.
The CPR will keep the blood pumping up to your brain, and the trainer, Paul Stevenson from Vital Ops, Donegal, he describes it as it keeps the brain nice and juicy.
Yeah.
But simple. You have a 10-minute window, and for each of those 10 minutes, your chances of survival go down by one, and you only have a 10% survival at best. Anyway, so that, you know, the reason my mum's still alive is because CPR was administered straight away and maintained for that long.
So then, whilst that was happening, while your twin was working on your mum, which is very distressful, actually. I don't know how he dealt with it, but it's not something you get over straight away. People were outsourcing a defib, and it got a little bit crazy there, didn't it?
Yeah, I ran out and rang the phone book. So I first of all rang for some local nurses. So again, shout out to Margaret Bell and Sonia Black, who came that night to help with some of the CPR. But I also knew we needed EFib, but I did not know where they were. Mm. And so I frantically just rang crying out. And as it turned out, we were quite lucky because people went for two different defibs. And one of them wasn't there when they went to go and get it. The other one was there at the White Strand Football Club, but the guy, a local neighbour who was bringing it to our home, actually crashed his car with the nerves of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my little brother went down the road, met him on the road, and you know, he threw it out the window and said, just take the defib, I'm okay. But you know, this was 35 minutes of chaos. Is the only word I
could describe. How do you reflect on that, Rosie, as a family? Is it an anecdote that you can chuckle at, or was it so stressful? You know, the chaos that ensued to get the defib to your mum, how do you reflect on it?
I mean, at the time, it honestly was the worst time of your life. Mm. Jerry Lane actually came a few minutes before the ambulance arrived, and he said, you're probably going to say goodbye to your mum, you know. So it was that bleak, it was that dark. Mm. But because she lived, we do get to laugh about it, and we are so grateful. And it's because she lived why I had to set up the Defib Minders Club, and I'm in the process of trying to set up the Rathmullen Community First Responders. But we've just turned something positive into more and more positive, and we're a really close family, so we're lucky to have each other to laugh about it together, if you know what I mean. We got through it together.
It's just like when I had to perform CPR on my dad, unfortunately he did pass away, but he was very healthy right up until the end of his life. I'd love him to still be here, but you know, he had a really long, healthy life, and I've got such amazing memories, and I'm so lucky to have a no regrets relationship, if you know what I mean. So it's very comforting.
Yeah.
But there was a lot going on that night, and it is actually almost funny, because there was an ambulance came for him, and then Aisling was expectant at the time, and then an ambulance had to come from her. And I was running, the two houses are beside each other. I was running between them. Then an ambulance got stuck in the driveway. The ramp got stuck. It was like something out of a comedy. And to be honest with you, I know my dad would find it hilarious. And maybe he is aware of what happened. But it's just funny how these situations can throw up amazing other situations. And thankfully, Hudson is here now. But on that night, we didn't know who he was going to be. And it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm delighted that your mum's here. And I'm delighted that she gets to see the fantastic efforts, Rosa, you and others have done in terms of fundraising, the WhatsApp group, the other families that you're helping in this process as well, Rosie, and lives inevitably that are being saved. And it's lovely that your mum gets to see it. Yeah.
I can't wait for the day that someone comes up to me and says, that person got saved because of the course that you had arranged. Like, that's what keeps driving me. But what we have here in the town of Rathmullen, we've raised €25,000, both some public, some private fundraising. We've spent over probably 20 of that. And we've bought new defibs for the area. There's 10 in Rathmullen now. And pumping the training.
That is amazing.
Yeah, we're pumping the training into the schools. So every fifth and sixth class student will do a mini medics course before they leave national
schools. So CPR and defib usage, which I think is fantastic.
46 kids, and after tonight, I am hoping to exceed 150 adults. Anybody who wants to come, Rye Community Centre at 6 p.m. this evening, hosted by an amazing guy, Paul Stevenson from Remelton, Vital Ops, Donegal. And four businesses have offered 50 euro vouchers. So you'll come for free and you might even win something.
Isn't it terrible? We have to put vouchers on to get people to go and learn life-saving techniques. No, I'm only joking. You know what? It's just if it gets that extra one or two people out the door, isn't that what it's all about? And as you say, don't be discouraged by in doing CPR, because in fairness, the 999 crew are quite good in telling you what to do, but it's great if you have that prior knowledge. So get to the course tonight or what have you. And also in terms of defib training, it takes away a little bit of the fear and panic, but you can still use a defib without training. But Rosie, let's find out where our nearest defib is. Isn't that an important thing as well? To and stick that with your air code on the fridge or wherever you want to stick it.
We have 158 people in the town here of Rathmullen that check every single defib that we have once a week. And they text into the defib groups to say the defib at the toilets at Rathmullen Beach, it's there and it's working. And the parts that are attached have not expired. It's a 5-minute check, but everybody should know where their nearest defib is to their home and also know who's checking, how is it being maintained. Yeah. You know, I really did genuinely grasp the bull by the horns and take the accountability and responsibility for this. But now we all do it. I do very little now other than man some WhatsApp groups, you know, which when it's running itself, it's fantastic.
Okay. Your mum's name, Rosie?
And my mum's name is Una. She's in Glasgow. She'll have no clue about this interview and she probably will die.
Well, we'll leave it then so if she's in Glasgow. But we have a lot of people listening in Glasgow. She could be watching us on Facebook. We just don't know. Anyway, Rosie, I'm only messing. I'm delighted that this was able to be done off the back of your mum still being here. I think that's a lovely element to this as well. You know what I mean? Because quite often it's not the way. Absolutely. So that's great, and I'm delighted. And fair play to your twin and everybody else who got involved on that night. And it just shows that CPR was the difference between your mother and it's not just actually her recovery, it's the nature of recovery as well, to keep that blood. What did you say? To keep the brain nice and juicy?
To keep the brain nice and juicy. Absolutely.
All right, Rosie, love to all, even your mum who doesn't listen, but that's fine. Good luck tonight.
My feelings are hurt
and you can't fix it now. The Rye Community Centre tonight at 6 p.m. That's where you get along to, hopefully. And after tonight, 150 people, these are just the adults, will have learned how to use a defib by the time tonight's course is done. And that ongoing work with the 5th and 6th students locally as well. Fantastic stuff, Rosie. Well done. Thank you so much for your time today and love to all. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye, Rosie. We were talking a little earlier on about a burst pipe in Clonmany causing disruption there. They hope to have it fixed by 6. Not such a positive timeline as it relates to another burst. Eunan, good morning to you.
Hello, Greg.
What's the situation in Glencar?
I'll tell you, I've been watching it now and I've mentioned to people about it. It's gone on now 7 weeks, would you believe it, it's running down the road.
Right.
It's not like that the council don't see it because they're going over the top of it every day. It's up just above the hospital gates there. Do you know as you turn up to go up the long lane?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Well, just above that, about 20 feet maybe above that, just at a light post, there's a leak there now and it's there for at least 7 weeks anyway.
Wow, so is it running water, Eunan? It's still running. It is actually running water, yeah?
It's actually running down the road for the last 7 weeks.
And the council are aware of it. Ishka Aaron, sorry, it's really their responsibility now, I think. Ishka Aaron are aware of it.
I was just talking to a few fellows just that were in the council, you know, but they said, well, it should be shorted. It'd be up to Ishka Aaron, maybe. I don't know. But it's just that I thought I would highlight it because, I mean, I seen last year whether we had a week or two of dry weather and they were gentlemen cutting water off, a week or two of dry weather. And now that the with plenty of rain going, they're just letting it not bother and they're diving over the top of it.
It's okay. It is crazy how quickly the warnings come in. But, I mean, how can we complain of water shortages when we've got a burst pipe in Letterkenny and the water running down Long Lane? Glencoe.
They're just above the entrance, the Long Lane. You see it there driving down because the road is soaking from where it's coming out.
Might go and have a look at that. Have a look at that on the way home. All right, well, we'll get on to Uisge Éireann. I presume someone's reported to Uisge Éireann, surely after 6 or 7 weeks.
I don't know, but there's nothing been done about it anyway. 7 weeks now, so it's running 7 weeks. I wouldn't like to be paying a meter if it was running seven weeks and non-stop.
We don't mention
but,
meters.
Just before you go there, I heard you talking about the A&E yesterday.
Yes, Eunan.
I was thinking... You see, a lot of people are going to A&E, where they're sent up to a doctor to go to get an X-ray done.
Yes.
Well, if the doctor sends them up for an X-ray, I don't see why you'd sit for hours in A&E for them to look at you first to tell you that that's where you have to go, when the doctor's already said that from the beginning.
So you believe
because
that...
I was sent up one time to go up for an X-ray, and I was told I had to go through an A&E first.
All right, so you believe you should go straight into the... You believe you should go... You've already been triaged, effectively. You believe you should go straight as soon as possible
the doctor says you need to go up for an X-ray, I mean, I don't see why you have to go through A&E then for them to tell you the same thing, but wait maybe half a day to get up to do it.
Yeah, all right, okay, fair enough. Listen...
It would ease a lot of pressure on A&E because there are people sitting there for wee silly things that doesn't need to be done.
But isn't that why you'd need if you had a small injuries clinic, you know when someone twists their knee or ankle or something like that there, if we had a small injuries clinic, which are being established elsewhere, that would take an awful lot of those people that sit on those chairs for 9, 12 hours. And I can say that because I've done it twice with twisted ankles. I've sat up there for 12 hours. That would be a small injury clinic. That's where we used to go to the Donegal Hospice in the hospital in Donegal Town, Eunan. You could go there, you could get an X-ray there, you could get a bandage on, you could get stitched. And that's going back 35 years. So you wouldn't go to Letterkenny unless it was much more serious. But anyway, we don't seem to do that anymore.
You see, the thing about it too, another thing I see too, Greg, is that do you see if you have money, you can pay for these things?
Well, it's getting more and more like that now. Yeah, well, it is. Now, listen, I don't begrudge people early access to a GP's or to a minor injuries clinic.
But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of county money, Nick, you know. Well, plenty of money, they'll look up at you.
We are seeing a two-tier sort of system emerge in GP and emergency care. There's no doubt about that. Eunan, stay safe. Keep an eye on that water flow for us, will you? I want an update.
I will. I'll be going up past it now in about 10 minutes.
Cheers, Eunan. Good man. Take it easy. Right, we are in the Mount Errigal tomorrow, Caroline, aren't we? And why are we there? We are there to mark Donegal Enterprise Week, and we've got loads of guests joining us in studio. If you're listening on the radio, it's going to sound and look the same if you choose to watch it. It's an outside broadcast, but we keep the thrust of the show the same. We just be able to talk about why we're there, and we'll have loads of guests as well. So we are out and about, but we have our Friday panel, and we have That's Entertainment, and we've got loads of great guests as well. So tune in. If you are down around the Mount Errigal, say hello. We love to say hello to you as well. But that's where we leave it from the station today. As I say, back tomorrow morning from 9. Stay safe, though, and stay tuned.